Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris with Mark Grody bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Number 1.
It's time for 5 on here on Rahimi, Harris, and Grody. Question number 1. Has Rome Odunze surpassed DJ Moore as the Bears wide receiver number 1?
I think this is a very compelling question because if it's just based on favored targets, it would certainly appear that way. That looked to be the case for Rome Odunze and Caleb Williams last week or Sunday, whichever you want to call it, 2 days ago, in that loss to the Lions. That was the case on the box score. When you see who had the most receiving yards, it was Rome, 7 receptions, 128 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 11 targets. The next highest in target number was DJ Moore with 6. So, based on that information, the numbers say it's the case. I certainly feel like he was looking for Rome more often than not. And if you'll remember, Matt Eberflus on draft day said, just like we drew it up. So that, I think, was the plan the entire time. Now, should he be, based on the fact that this is a Yak and Rack league and I still feel like that skill set is more suited to DJ than Rome? That I don't know. But either way, get whoever you need to get who's open in the game. And that certainly was Rome Odunze in this last one.
This is an easy question to answer. Yes. Rome Odunze is WR1. And it's not just the targets that you mentioned. The fact that Rome Odunze has been targeted, what, 20 times now over 2 games? That's 10 targets per contest compared to DJ Moore's 11. So it's almost a 2-to-1 ratio. It's not just that he leads the team in receptions with 13 or yards with 165. It's that he has 3 touchdowns and nobody else has caught a touchdown as a receiver. It's also the fact that he's caught 9 passes that have been first downs. 9. The next highest guy, DJ Moore. Only 4. He has become that guy in this offense. And I want to say it's a good thing, but I also do believe, even though there's only one rock, you got to spread that thing around. And I'm not just talking about DJ Moore when I say that. I'm talking about guys like Cole Kmet, obviously Colston Loveland, and eventually Luther Burden III. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes further the further we get into the season. But I will say this. This weekend, I expect about 40 pass attempts plus for one Caleb Williams. So I think a lot of guys are going to be getting the rock this weekend.
For the first time on Sunday, Rome Odunze looked like a number 9 overall pick in the draft. And I know he had some good games last year, but he looked like a man out there. That's the Rome Odunze that we all looked at and said, yeah, take that guy. We know that there were some other really good wide receivers, obviously 2 that were drafted ahead of him, but I think most of us were like, okay, we'll take that guy. I agree with Layla that this has been what they have been desiring all along. I mean, it all makes sense. You bring in 2 guys on the same time clock, 2 talented rookies in Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. It's a natural that you're going to want to build the chemistry between those 2 and want Rome Odunze to be your top guy. I don't underestimate DJ Moore. I still think he's a terrific player, but the chemistry, like last year, is just a tick off with those 2 guys on the field. For whatever reason, for whomever's
timing,
for whomever's fault it is. And I'm not calling out either at this point. Maybe both, I guess. But there's just something a little bit off with DJ Moore. I think they gave it DJ Moore every opportunity to be that guy last year. And this year, there was a plan to get Rome Odunze more involved. And even Rome Odunze told me before the season started, hell yeah, I'm going to be better this year because of a year of experience and the chemistry that is growing with Caleb Williams, which wasn't always there last year either with Rome, but it's clear that it is here now, and it's a matter of whether or not it's here to stay, but I think it is.
There is also a plan, by the way, for Rome Odunze to continue to be wide receiver one while Luther Burden III, I believe, supplants DJ Moore. But we can talk about that later.
That's going to take a season, though.
Yeah, that's a different question. Yeah. That was just something.
I was just throwing it out
How
there.
Dare you?
Huh?
Number two. Are the Chicago Bears the most disappointing team to start the NFL season?
Man, if it's not. I hate to say it, but it might also be the team coming to town, even though they just won last week. Because who in their right mind, and I almost just swore, trades away Micah Parsons for the draft picks that make the team better and therefore they get lower. The return was bad. The decision was bad. Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know how you're going to 1995 your way out of this one, but I don't necessarily know that it's going to happen either. When I think of two teams meeting on Sunday, I think of two teams that have disappointed me, Layla. And I know the Bears have been disappointing, but again, I think we knew they probably weren't going to win in Detroit. That seemed like a foregone conclusion to start the year. So it's the team that traded Micah Parsons. Did you see how much better you made the Packers? Those draft picks are going to be like 40 and 45, and there's only 32 picks in the first round. That's how bad this is.
I think that team is bad, but I don't think they're the most disappointing, the Dallas Cowboys, I'm saying. I think the most disappointing team is the team that everybody kind of hitched their wagon to a couple of years ago. And since then, it's been real shaky, wobbly even. Looks like the wheels are going to come off. Houston? That team would be the Houston Texans.
I see. I guessed it. I sniffed it out.
Listen,
see?
Listen.
Getting to know you, Marshall.
Did you watch the end of that game last night?
Oh, yeah.
Against the Buccaneers?
C.J. Stroud has been very disappointing.
That offense has yet to show up this season. They lost at home to the Buccaneers, who are not a bad team, but certainly not, in my opinion, a world-beater team. They lost their season opener at the L.A. Rams, but managed just 9 points. I think there's a lot of questions going on right now about C.J. Stroud and that offense. Last year, it was like, oh, he's got receivers who are hurt. But right now, I'm just looking at C.J. Stroud and like, what's the deal, bro? You want to get rid of that ball a little bit quicker? You want to, you know, create some problems for defenses? It has not happened yet. I think they're a much bigger disappointment than the Bears right this second. That'll be confirmed, by the way, if they lose this weekend, because they got the Jaguars up next on the schedule.
Well, they also didn't run the ball with a lick yesterday.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about getting Nick Chubb, and that was a possibility for at least Marshall and Layla. we liked that idea for
not
the
for
Bears.
Ryan Poles.
And unfortunately, he gets only 43 yards in that game.
Did have a 25 yard
carries.
Did have a 25 yard touchdown run though.
Yeah, that makes the other carries even worse.
That's true. C.J. Stroud, 13 of 24, 207 yards and a TD. And as long as we're here, Tampa Bay's Baker Mayfield. A lot of people love Baker Mayfield going into this year. 25 of 38, 215 yards, 2 TDs, and 0 picks.
He has a lot of guys
sacks.
To throw to.
Like, think about how we talk about the 4 sacks on Baker Mayfield versus the 4 sacks we talk about on Caleb Williams.
Yeah. If it's not the Bears is the most disappointing team to start the season, I guess I'm going to go with the Chiefs. Somebody had to say the Chiefs. The
wow.
Chiefs are. They are 0-2. Now, their losses have not exactly been embarrassing.
I'm about to say.
I mean, they lost at the Chargers 27-21, and they lost to the best team in the NFL, maybe, in the Philadelphia Eagles 20-17, the game that was the national game this past week. But, guys, it's Patrick Mahomes. It's the Kansas City Chiefs. There were some people who predicted this based on last year's Super Bowl that could be the end of the Chiefs dynasty. Like they can recoup because they have Patrick Mahomes, but it may take a couple of years of quote unquote rebuilding back to being the Kansas City Chiefs we know. So I'm going to go Kansas City Chiefs, the 0-2 KC Chiefs.
Number three.
This is 5 on It with Raheemi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. Here's question number three. Through 2 games of the Bears season, do you care to change your prediction on their win-loss record?
Yeah, but it doesn't have to do with the Bears necessarily. It has to do with the Packers.
What was your prediction, first of all?
I thought they were going to be 9-8.
Okay.
And I thought that maybe one of those Packers games originally would be a W. And I also thought that they would beat the Vikings. So those things probably aren't happening. One of them absolutely did not happen. So now that that's said, I guess they're 8-9. It's a lifestyle. 500 is a lifestyle.
Doesn't feel good saying it. I know, Layla. Well, it doesn't.
It's just a way of life. Like 500, fair to middling, whatever you want to call it. It's sucks a way of life.
Sucks that we can't say 500 anymore.
But 9-8, if you said 9-8 and you thought they were going to beat the Vikings and you thought they were going to win one of those games against the Packers, can't you just come with me? 7-10?
Ride with me?
No.
You're not doing it.
So no, they're
still
going to
beat somebody.
You know why?
The Joe Burrow game.
No, it's not just that. It's executive office over there is in his fourth year, and somebody's got to hold that person to a standard.
But that's not what you think they should do. It's what you think they will do when we talk about predictions, right? Like mm-hmm. I think they will go 7-10. And
it's
if
all
I do,
imaginary, so for me, it's also a should.
So it is a should, not a. I got you. Listen, for me, it's this simple. I pick 7-10, and right now. If I do adjust it, the number's not going up. It's going down.
Is it going down?
No, I'm going to stick with 7-10.
I think you should stick with 7-10.
I think they will figure things out offensively and that there's going to be a lot of shootouts between now and the end of the season.
I, and Marshall knows this, when the schedule came out, I had the Bears for either 10 or 11 wins. And then after watching training camp and being at most of the training camp practices and the off-season program, I downgraded my pick before the season started officially when I did the picks on the Take the North podcast. And here I said 8-9. I am still pretty comfortable with my 8-9 prediction. The Bears have been horrible through two games. I do not think that they are that bad. I do think that they have 8 wins in them. I don't know if it's going to feel as promising as I thought the 8-9 that I had predicted would, but I'm comfortable in sticking with my 8-9.
Five on it. What was more satisfying for you to see last night? An excellent performance from Jameson Taillon or PCA homering and doubling?
For me, it was PCA homering and doubling. You're going to need his offense to be clicking once you make the playoffs. And since we're not talking to Ian Happ and the Cubs' magic number is now 2, we can talk about them making the playoffs. And he got every bit of that home run in that game. In fact, Grody and I were talking about it during the break because it looked like it went a lot farther, I guess, than it actually did, because I felt like he hit it a million miles, but StatCast said, no, it wasn't a million.
Yeah, I mean, what I had was 424 for the PCA home run, and Michael Busch was actually 439. But
now, listen, you need Jameson Taillon in order to make this thing functional. You're probably going to have to use him come playoff run somehow. I don't know how you want to mix it up. If there's a line blender there, so to speak, with your starting pitchers, that's an old Blackhawks term for when they were in the playoffs.
Love that line.
Yeah,
blender.
I miss those days. But when it comes to PCA hitting, you just have to have that functional in order for the Cubs to have a chance of advancing out of a wild card round.
I don't know that you necessarily need PCA to be what we saw in the first half, but functional is a good way to put it, Layla. He's got to be a threat to do something.
You need more slug than what you've had. Extra bases are good.
He had no hits in his previous 4 games. 0 for 15 over that time span. That's not getting it done, right? He has to be a threat either to get on base. So, hey, if you need to work on that bunting, hey, figure it out. Be more disciplined at the plate. Get on base with a walk. But he's got to be on the base pass to cause a problem. And obviously his favorite way to get on base is to circle them all in one fell swoop. But I don't think that's being realistic when you look at the home run total of 29 now. And I still wonder who's going to be the first Cub to 30 home runs. Not sure, because Michael Busch hit number 28 last night. Who's going to be the first to 30 home runs? But I think
should have been
guys,
the dude who's injured.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But for Pete Crow Armstrong, great, functional. I think that's kind of bare minimum stuff. I will say this. Jameson Taillon, I think, is going to be a guy starting playoff games. And if that is the case, then I need him to be just like what he was last night, and it's going to be against better competition. So I think Tyone's more important to me at this point.
6 shutout innings from Taillon last night. It was good. Like, I just kept watching, and he's going back out there again. He's going out there in the 6th inning. Still not giving up runs. So it was really enjoyable. But Pete Crow Armstrong has been frozen in time. He has been so stalled out, like, to the point where, and this happens to me every once in a while, I have felt bad for Pete Crow Armstrong. He's just been nothing. Like, there's been nothingness with Pete Crow Armstrong. Really, what did he have, 26 home runs at the All-Star break, I want to say? He's up to 29 now. So it has been monumental how much things have slowed, how overmatched he has been at times. And to see him not just hit the home run last night, but to have a double, I thought it was really important for him. I was relieved for him, and I sensed that he was relieved, and even his teammates probably a little bit relieved for PCA. So PCA is my answer.
PCA, by the way, 25 home runs at the All-Star break.
Okay.
Also with 25 home runs at the All-Star break.
Yeah, Seiya.
That would be Seiya.
Go ahead and say it. Seiya.
Yeah, Seiya.
Yeah.
He's got 27 now.
Number five.
This is Five On It with Raheem Harris and Grody on 670 The Score. Here's our final question. On Monday, the Cubs reinstated right-hander Michael Soroka from the 15-day injured list. You know, the guy that the Cubs traded for at the deadline, and then he got hurt in his first outing. Remember that? Soroka pitched two scoreless innings with two strikeouts and a pair of walks. Were you surprised to see that the corresponding move was optioning righty Ben Brown to AAA Iowa?
Here's what concerns me more than that, even, Ray. It's that those were the moves. Like, that's where you're at with this. Your choices are either a guy whose velocity was low before you even traded for him, which I still am left wondering, how does that get past the crew over at Addison and Clark whenever, I don't know, you're supposed to have a handle on that, you know? Like, who didn't see that as a red flag? Even though Jed Hoyer said they knew it was a thing, who didn't see his velo drop as a red flag? You've lost a lot of his services relative to the time that you traded for him because he was injured. So you'd like to think that if your pitch lab is worth what you think it is, and you can indeed develop pitching, that Ben Brown would have had a third pitch by now. That what we saw, even going back to the Japan game, that there would have been improvement from there, so much so that he would be a part of this team in September. So what concerns me even more than anything is that you're not going to get full value out of the guy you traded for when there were other people available at the time. He's not starting for you. And in addition, a guy who you also hoped would start for you and is in the bullpen, you've now sent down again. That's not good.
I'm looking at Ben Brown, and I know he had a scoreless outing right before they sent him down. But here's the hard truth to the matter. He went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 outings, giving up runs in each of his previous 12 outings. Now, some of those were, in fact, starts, but half of those were not starts. So if you can't go out there and not give up runs, I could see it. The problem with this is, my two biggest indicators right now are, what is your whip and what is your strikeouts per nine? He was one of just two guys they had on the team that had a strikeout per nine over 10. The other being Daniel Palencia, except for when you add in the two new guys, Taylor Rogers, Andrew Kitchich, both over 10. So I feel like we're getting kind of where I want to be, but you need like four or five guys who can strike people out.
Cubs have given Ben Brown every chance over the last 2 years, whether it be a starter. They wanted him to be a starter. Didn't work out. They wanted him in the bullpen. Hasn't worked out. It's been up and down, I suppose. He's not a complete failure, obviously. We could see Ben Brown back on the big league team. But one thing I'll say here about Mike Soroka, and it was brought up by Taylor McGregor, really good report from her. The pitch lab apparently might be working for him because he got his velocity back up to 96 miles per hour. So that's not necessarily the end-all answer for Mike Soroka. In his two shutout innings last night, walked a couple guys too, struck out two guys over 39 pitches. But it is good that he is getting better and the velocity is getting better. And?
All right. I thought we had a stinger there for some reason, guys. Have we just not had time to play it recently? That's my bad.
Sting it.
Coming up next here on Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score, we have more. One of our best Five On It questions, we wanted to make a segment for you. And that is, now that some people have had the chance to look at the tape, and now that we've had a chance to sit with it, what was the amount of growth that Caleb Williams had from game 2 to game 1? And what does his coach think? We discuss it all next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Williams on third and long. It is complete. Odunze inside the 10 for the end zone touchdown. Williams connecting with the second year receiver out of Washington, Rome Odunze, 28-yard pass play. And the Bears reach the end zone on their first possession.
That's when the game was tied at 7. Do you remember that time?
I vaguely remember that.
I was like, oh, the Bears answered. We got ourselves a game. And then even at 21-14, I was like, oh, it's only 21-14.
But there was too much time left on the clock.
3rd and 9? Yada, yada, yada. It's 52-21 to end the game.
That is a very good use of yada, yada, yada.
This is Brahimi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. That was courtesy of Fox Sports. And Caleb Williams was not the problem for me in this game. The biggest problem was the atrocious defense, which we discussed for an hour as to how to improve. That was at 10 o'clock. If you missed that, I strongly recommend you go back and listen on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. As far as what we did see out of Caleb Williams, and now that the All-22 is out, you typically get a lot more information coming out on social media and YouTube. People have watched the videos. I thought he felt more comfortable. I felt like he was more in rhythm based on the rhythm of the play and the timing of the play that we saw. I did not think that he was as much the issue. Yes, he got sacked 4 times. But as I mentioned, so did Baker Mayfield last night. It's just we're going to look at it more because it's him. But were they bad sacks? Were they stupid sacks? I didn't feel like that was the case necessarily. I didn't even think he was holding on to the ball that much longer in those points like he had in previous games. So for me, still an improvement when you consider how to put it all together.
Winning covers up a lot of warts. I think that's what it comes down to. And because they didn't win, and also the way they got embarrassed, the warts are just out here in one of those mirrors, you know, where it's close up and the light, you turn the lights on around the mirror, like a makeup mirror. It's just like, I can't. Like, you want to back away from the mirror. That's what it's like looking at the Bears right now.
Yeah, I mean, and he looked decisive, like very decisive. The first drive 2 weeks in a row, as Layla pointed out, but like 3rd and 9 touchdown pass to Rome Odunze. There was the 28-yarder, the 3rd and 4 to Zacchaeus. The second quarter touchdown drive, which was Caleb's 6-yard touchdown pass to Rome Odunze, made it 21-14 Detroit at the time, right around the time I was putting $40 on the Bears to win the game. There was on that drive, though, there was a 21-yard pass to Odunze, a 15-yarder to Rome as well, 8 yards to Manungai, and Caleb using his legs well, an 8-yard rush as well. So, yeah, there were things specifically, as they just kind of laid out, that really stood out to me. I will have to ask Tim Jenkins about this. I think the sack question is a great question, Layla. There was one in the fourth quarter that he took that I thought was bad. Pinpoint. You know what I'm talking about?
It was middle of the field. The pocket collapsed around him.
Yeah, and he's just looking. And
that was probably the one.
Yeah, he could have thrown it away or ran out of bounds, and he did neither. So that's the only one with my eyes that I saw was a bad sack. But we'll ask Tim about that later.
The Lions did a good job of containing him throughout the game and not letting him get outside the pocket.
They saw what he did against Minnesota.
When they did flush him outside the pocket, that's when the interception happened. So that's something else to talk to Tim Jenkins about. But we talk about it amongst ourselves first because Ben Johnson discussed it with the media yesterday. Here was his take after he rewatched the tape.
Well, yeah, I did see significant growth. It's not perfect yet. There's still a number of plays where our eyes aren't quite in the right position, or we're holding on to the ball just a tick longer than what we're coaching. But I did see tremendous growth in terms of going through the progression. There were a few times there where we had to get to number 3 or number 4 in the read, and he was trusting his feet and his footwork and was able to get there. So I did think he got better from week one to week two. I'm encouraged by what I saw, and I'm hopeful that we'll continue to see another leap here this week.
Here's the other thing. Is let's go back to Wednesday of last week where Caleb Williams didn't speak to the media and Mark Grody personally until 6:30 when he was scheduled to speak at 2 or 3, right? It was 3.
Yeah, it was right around between 2:30 and 3. But yeah.
So, okay, yeah. 3 o'clock, he doesn't speak until 6:30. Then we hear that he was working on stuff, which is a completely normal answer. People get tied up at work. So that makes sense. But the implication is there's extra work to do. And we see reports about his car being at the facility late and all this. What if he hadn't gone out there on the first drive and scored a touchdown? Then you're probably asking, well, was this work worth it? So it's nice that not only are they able to show the work with 3 scoring drives where they did score 3 touchdowns out of, unfortunately, 13, but there was still that level of, this looks better than it did the week before.
I think the confidence level in watching these first 2 games based on, yes, the first drive in each of those games, that goes a long way because of what you're so used to seeing. You had never seen Caleb Williams lead a game opening drive for a touchdown. Now you've seen it 2 weeks in a row. And then just the understanding of what it has looked like compared to what it looks like now. And I think Ben Johnson summed it up perfectly. He still has work to do. There's a long ways to go, but there was growth. And I think as long as we see growth, especially here in the first half of the season, we're working towards something which Ben Johnson can get excited about, which can be productive on the field. And now you're talking about an offense that looks more like what Ben Johnson is used to running.
Yeah. And we know the areas in this, even in this game, where things had to have been better. Now, he was put behind the eight ball with the 2nd and 32 in the second quarter. Again, when it's a 7-point game, Lions are up 14-7. You had the Dolman hold. The Braxton Jones face mask would set it up, but he didn't throw it away. I think he was, you know, I think, Marshall, because we and I kind of went back on forth, I think it was in between. I think he was in between. And this is still, like, bad play by Caleb. He was in between wanting to make a play and throwing the ball away. Does that make sense?
He saw daylight and he saw the window and the window was closing and he could have just thrown it away, but that's part of quarterbacking. A bigger part, people would argue, than the physical tools aspect of it is just the ability to process and make quick decisions.
Right. That was one time where he did not make a quick decision. And then the other one was the 3-and-out to begin the second half.
Well, with the penalty.
Yeah. But he did have a bad pass to Olamide Zaccheaus on that particular, I think it was, 3rd and 9.
Threw
behind him. And I know I'm just being nitpicky for the sake of it, but these are real things.
That's not nitpicky, though. Yeah. That's a real play that happened in a clutch situation when you're talking about 3rd and 9. The play was designed to get a first down. If he hits him, they get the first down.
Right, and penalties are forgiven, or the penalty by the false start by Swift to begin the drive.
Well, keep in mind the phrase that was reported. You know, Caleb Williams said in the pregame of the first game against the Vikings, be Superman when I need to be Superman. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a double-edged sword when he says that, because number one, he's thinking he has to be at times. Or number two, I'm sure he's thinking about what got him to the NFL to be the first overall pick, which was in college, being Superman relative to everybody else. Except you're with a whole other, world of villains and heroes here.
This of is
a
defense.
This is a whole other comic universe
a lot
that
of
you've
anti-heroes.
Just entered where the skill sets are a little different. But there are still going to be those times that kick in where he's going to think, I can make this happen. And then the league tells you, no, you can't.
I guess he's learning that. And you know what,
and Kerry Joseph is like, I'll take this. Thank you.
Yeah, I want him to still have those moments. That's why we went back and forth on the interception play yesterday. Like, there still is a play. Like, every time Caleb tries to make a play and it's an interception or it's a mistake or whatever, we can't be like, well, you just got to make the simple plays. You just got to take your checkdowns. No. A big part of the reason why he was drafted number one overall and everybody loved Caleb Williams is his ability to do the special. So I see where he's a little bit conflicted. And where everybody's a little bit conflicted.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I get it, but at the same time, you need to learn how to crawl before you walk. And when I think about Ryan Poles saying there were steps skipped in training camp last year, and I'm not saying he talks like that. I'm just exaggerating the comment.
Well, while I agree,
but when
that,
I
yeah.
say that, is that he has to learn how to be able to check down on simple plays to move the chains, get the yard so you can continue the drive. Yes, you absolutely need to learn how to do that because you didn't do it enough last year.
And he didn't do it. That third and nine that you just mentioned.
The Zacchaeus play.
That is the perfect example of, hey, just hit that guy and we get to keep, you'll get a chance to put the cape on, step into the phone booth, but you can't do that if you're down 52-21.
You get the cape put on you when you're consistent.
He's not trying to be special on that play. He just missed the receiver on that play.
Let's go back to the comment though. When we talk about be Superman, what does that mean to you? Because to me that just means
taking a chance downfield, taking like touchdowns instead of checkdowns. There's a guy open in the middle of the field, you could pass it to whomever, but he sees a guy downfield, maybe he thinks he can make a special play. I don't want to take that away from
him. That's not how I see it though. I see the Superman thing as him just being in a position to win the game at the end of the game because it takes such ferocity to be able to drive down the field with a minute left.
No, I thought being Superman for him was rolling. Like when the play breaks down, you get to cook.
Right, at any point in the game, not just the fourth quarter.
And that's what I thought it meant, because that's frankly what he and a lot of other college quarterbacks before him did.
Right.
Yeah, like fixing the busted play is how a lot of guys win draft position and they make money in the league.
And what has never
gone away.
I'm not
saying that's his entire skill set. I am not saying that. But that's what I thought be Superman meant.
And what has never gone away for Caleb Williams and won't for the next 7 to 10 years is the arm talent. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to waste that arm talent. When a guy has the capability of making any throw on a football field, eventually you want to see him make every throw on the football
field.
But
first I want to see him to make the basic throw. Complete the pass.
But is there ever a place then for you guys?
Yes.
For him to make the special play?
Yes.
Can he not take a chance? Can he not go for the home run ball instead of a check down on a second and seven?
Let me put it to you this way. Did you see what Jared Goff did on Sunday?
He threw for 334 yards and 5 touchdowns.
How many quote-unquote special plays did Jared Goff make?
Oh, he made
and
a couple.
52 points.
He made a 64-yard pass to Jamison Williams. He made a
44-yard
pass to Jamison Williams.
Williams had
those are pretty big plays.
The secondary.
Yeah,
but I thought that secondary was out of place on those plays. I don't think
not the
he went for
line.
It though. Those are examples big time
plays. And also
plays.
He just went after Amon-Ra a bunch because he knew that he could beat the one-on-one with Tyreek.
And that's what I want to see with certain receivers. But what I'm saying is, right now with Ben Johnson, the way he designs it up, the whole thing about yards after the catch. Ball placement to guys who are 15 yards or less away. Can you do that?
Put your receiver in a position to succeed.
That's the
I got
basis.
You. No, I agree with that.
Are you kidding, though? But also the Superman play is scheme up the play where your arm talent is better than everybody else's in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Take the shots downfield. And they're not doing that. Like, a lot of what Jared Goff did was in structure, too. But, you know, I really liked the touchdown play to Roma Dunze. I thought that was not the easiest thing in the world to do. There was a half motion there. The design of it was smart. Dunze comes inside. He gets to the quarterback. He drops back Caleb. Roma Dunze then motions back in front of him. They're in sync running together. That was by design. But that's a Superman type of play. Like, there can be Superman type plays, but structure wise, let it rip. Like, I want that guy to be able to throw a deep ball and do it confidently. I want two shots a game.
Yeah, he took a shot. I think it was to Roma Dunze, the double coverage ball where he overthrew him. But I mean, that's taking a shot. I guess, yes, I want him to take the shots down the field. I do. But until you're making the basic plays, I'm not really that is not at the forefront for me, because move the chains. Move the freaking chains. Three and out stink.
Oh, yeah.
Especially move the chains.
Begin the second half 2 weeks in a row. Hey, I wrote it down. Another question for Tim. You brought it up. Ben's play calling. How conducive, so far, through two games, has Ben's play calling been for Caleb Williams in this offense?
Yeah, that's a good point. We are waiting for Tim Jenkins. He's at 1 o'clock today, and he just issued his breakdown. You can watch it on YouTube. It's going to take you longer than the time between now and when he comes on our show.
We gotcha.
Yeah, so also, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas is the place to be for football fans September 26th through the 29th. Spiegel and Holmes will be broadcasting live that Friday and Saturday from Stadium Swim. Then we'll be staying over the weekend for the Monday reaction show after the Chicago and Las Vegas game. our friends Melissa and Austin from US 99 will also be there on that Friday morning. So join the Score for an incredible weekend, September 26th through 29th at Circa in Las Vegas, Chicago's football headquarters. Log on to CircaLasVegas.com to reserve your stay today. Now, we talked a lot about the performance of the Bears in certain situations, but then there's also that how they got to the situation part. So let's talk about that next. Raheemy Harrison Grody on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Listen to Raheemy Harrison Grody on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. We broadcast live from The Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers.
Like it.
Did we all just start immediately dancing to the song? A little Outcast never hurt nobody.
Robbie, like, said, guys, coming back, just music. I said, well, you better make this music better be good if that's all you're coming back with.
I like the horns when the horns come
this
in.
Is so, yeah, let's let it wait, because then we're going to talk about something
XRT?
That isn't as fun. No, this no, is an XRT.
Not XRT.
There it is. This would also be like a good end of show track too, but psych, we have another hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Tim Jenkins, our film guy, is at one.
Can't wait for him.
Yes. Yeah, well, here's what you could have waited for. The Bears shot themselves in the foot with a bunch of penalties. We didn't get to this when
Ouch.
It came to the Lions game because, well, it didn't entirely make a difference when you lose 52-21, but it does give you an understanding of the situations that they are dealing with. As we've mentioned before, we knew they had penalty problems in game one. I was a little more lenient, though, because I said to myself, this is a brand new offense, so you're going to have a lot of false start penalties. You're trying to work through cadence. I know that that was going to be the case. I think Darnell Wright got robbed on one of the holding calls that was just good offensive skill out of an offensive lineman. That was not the case in the game against the Lions. They still had penalties, but this time it was 8 for 50 yards. So that was down from 12 for, you know, 127 at the time. So 8 for 50 is a lot better. But it was the down and distance situation that really put them in a bad place. The Bears had a 2nd and 32, a 3rd and 26, a 2nd and 34, and a 3rd and 34. Those numbers aren't even real. I like, there's only so much you can do in those situations, and that's kind of the problem too. Now, a second down and a long is much easier to convert. You can eat up a lot of yards. I feel like the Bears were able to do that, but regardless, when it matters, when it's not going to be such a vast spread, these are the things that will count against you in a one-score game.
Yeah, and we talked about the fact that only the Titans last week had more, in week one, that is, penalty yards than the Bears. Now, the Bears currently rank 3rd in the league after everybody's played 2 games. The Giants and, of course, the Titans, as mentioned, have the most. And at least the Giants played some extra football, so maybe that's why they have more penalty yardage. But the 177 on 20 penalties, not a great look. And I think it's got to be the most frustrating thing going on right now for Ben Johnson, because that's the one thing you can, for the most part, you talked about the phantom call. That's the one thing you can't control, is what happens before the ball is snapped.
And like the Drew Dolman hold, it's so hard to legislate holding, especially on offensive linemen. There's like an imaginary line you cross, because the theory is, you know, you can call holding every play.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? I'm gonna go with Patrick Manelli. Patrick Manelli.
Patrick Manelli.
That's right. It's Patrick Manelli. Did you get him his Lexapro, by the way? Did you rush that out
20,
over?
Right?
I'm on it, yeah.
Robbie, please don't acquire drugs
now
when you don't have a prescription to do so.
He's going to get a melatonin.
That's for Marshall. Marshall's got the sleeping problem. We're going to get him some melatonin. Yeah. Patrick Manley said he was depressed about the Bears, so I wanted to start him off on 10 milligrams of the Lexapro. Maybe we move him up to Provasic, but that's when things are really serious.
Maybe we just suggest one of his long snapper IPAs for him.
That would probably do the trick. My guess is he had probably many of those after his post-game show. But what Patrick Manley did say was, you know, it is a reaction of us and myself. I'll just use me. Like when you hear about penalties, and we did this with Matt Eberflus, and we did this with his predecessor, Matt Nagy. When things are undisciplined, we blame the coach. Patrick wanted none of that. He said that is on the players. Yeah, of course the coach sets the tune, but he can only say, don't make penalties so often throughout. So I thought that was interesting, and going forward, I will take more care when it comes to who to blame on penalties.
I think it depends on what you know they're trying to do. You know, when it's lazy penalties, when you know somebody's just not doing what they're supposed to.
Or roughing penalties.
Or even, let's use him as an example, I thought they were going to call a personal foul if the shoving match between Tyreek Stevenson and Amon-Ra St. Brown at the line of scrimmage any further. You know, those are the ones where I'm like, really? Really?
Remember Javon Wims going after C.J. Gardner-Johnson is his name?
Yes, if I can instill one thing to everybody listening, do not hit somebody wearing a helmet.
What about with a balled up fist?
What good does it do?
Just don't hit somebody wearing a helmet. It is not going to do what you think it does.
Do not hit somebody with a helmet. Or what if they have one of the fluffy foam things on the top?
That's actually a good point.
The Guardian cap?
Yeah,
that's even worse. It does even less at that point.
Oh, that's true. But it's a softer land for your hand.
Yeah.
That you're planning on injuring by hitting somebody?
Well, yeah.
You're already putting more thought into this than they did.
I punched a locker in middle school and broke my hand, so there's that.
I've punched a wall with soundproofing on it after I spent like 2 hours editing a piece for my sportscast in Austin, and then the computer messed up and it deleted the entire thing, even after I saved it.
Marshall, did you ever punch a wall again after that? Or did you?
No,
you
I learned from that particular mistake because being in a cast is not cool.
Yeah.
Especially not in middle school, especially when people ask what happened. And
did you play baseball in high school?
Yeah, I played baseball.
Did
in
you
high
break
school.
Your finger at any point? Because
But if I did, I would have told someone and I probably would have sat out while my finger healed.
I broke my finger several times playing baseball. It's just a rite of passage. If you play hard league baseball, you're going to break
your
finger.
Did you play big league baseball?
Not even close. I couldn't even make it past my sophomore year. Are you kidding me?
By
choice, man. By choice.
But yeah, that's my one lesson to you. Don't hit somebody wearing a helmet. And you'd ask yourself, Layla, why do you have to say something so obvious? How many times do we see it happen in a season?
Okay, so can I be positive for a second?
That's not what got them into these situations. What got them into these situations were a couple false starts, as we mentioned, a hold, you know, those types of things.
I kind of expected this on the road. They did have less penalties and less penalty yardage than they did at home. That's why I expect this weekend back at home that they'll have even less. So I think there is a scaling down of penalties. That's what I'm hoping. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but it makes sense that you would have more penalties on the road than you would at home. And they didn't. They scaled it down. I think they'll scale it down even again now that they're back at Soldier Field. You don't agree with that, Grody?
No. I was just going to say, I love the idea of, I love this bit. Say something positive. We should do that.
Oh, no. I only say things I actually believe, and there's not much positive to say right now.
I'm just saying you could always find something positive. But even if it's not sports, I think there's a segment waiting for us. Maybe we need to fine-tune it a little bit, but say something positive.
I love Layla's shirt today.
Oh, Whitney Houston.
It is
I'll
a sick shirt.
Love you.
It is a sick tee.
I do love this shirt.
Yeah, it's nice.
I love Whitney.
Who doesn't?
Gone too long or gone too
soon.
She's
what we call
an
elite talent.
Yeah, I miss her. Coming up next here on Remy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score, I actually think we are going to see here some positive out of what Tim Jenkins has to say coming up next. He is our resident film guy. He studies quarterbacks, and you will hear him coming up next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.